Il-program li ser tisimaw huwa miġjublilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.
Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM 103.7. I'm Patricia Camilleri, and in this series we shall be hearing from academics about their research and from students and other members of the campus community about the many activities which will be taking place during the coming year. I'm very happy to have with me in the studio today Professor Luciano Mulestagno, who is an associate professor and director of the Institute for Sustainable Energy. Just a usual short bio. Professor Mulestagno holds a PhD in materials physics from the Missouri University of Science and Technology. He joined the University for Sustainable Energy in 2009 after having been the CEO of Heritage Malta for 3 years. Prior to that, he spent 12 years working in the United States with Sun Edison, one of the world's largest suppliers of solar and semiconductor materials. His last post there was that of Director of Worldwide Labs, with responsibility for laboratories in Asia, Europe, and the US. His major expertise is in the characterization and synthesis of semiconductor and solar materials, and he was a pioneer in the development of several characterization techniques. He has published extensively and holds 8 patents in semiconductor solar materials. His current research interests are in photovoltaics and other renewable energy technologies that could be applicable to Malta. He's also Vice President of Dean Laird Helwa, the National Trust of Malta, and PRO of the University of Malta Academic Staff Association, UMASA. Welcome to the programme, Professor Mulestagno. So, from your bio, we can see what your interests are. Your main area of expertise actually is in silicone materials. You read for your PhD on infrared laser detection of defects in silicone. And this topic has obviously occupied a lot of your professional life. I might say the connection between silicone and solar voltaics, which might not be obvious to the listener, is that it is used as a raw material by the solar, photovoltaic and electronics industries. And I have to admit that I had to look that up. Perhaps you could start off by telling us how, and also perhaps why, the industry has developed in the last 20 years since you started along this road with your PhD in hand.
Thanks. Yes, solar cells were really developed about 50 years ago, but the industry really took off about 10 years ago, and primarily due to incentives, especially in Europe. Germany was at the forefront, and then it was followed by Italy, by Spain, more recently US, China, Japan. What happens too was that while the technology has not changed that much, the cost due to mass production has dropped the prices significantly. In fact, in the last 4 years or so, the prices of solar panels, as anybody who's in the market to buy any, even here in Malta, knows, has dropped dramatically by as much as 50%. So what used to cost one today costs one half. And because of that, solar is very close today to what we call cost parity, meaning you can produce energy, especially in places like Malta where we have a lot of sun, you can produce energy from the sun at almost, not quite yet, the same price as you would from fossil fuels, which is the holy grail. Because once you're producing at the same price, then there's an incentive rather than a disincentive to go to renewable energy.
The idea of the sun being the main component, or the necessary component, is an interesting one, because in the 60s I already remember solar heating panels, say, in Israel, which were practically, I think you had to have one practically on every house. And you said, oh yes, obviously, because Israel is a very sunny place. But now if you go to UK, you find more and more slanting roofs with south-facing roofs all covered with photovoltaic panels. Mm-hmm. So the technology has improved such that even in northern climes they can actually benefit.
Indeed. In fact, Malta, obviously, we're privileged. We have the highest insolation in the EU. But even in places like the UK, it will produce about half what it does here, but it still makes it worth it. In Malta, currently, you know, if you buy a system, the payback period, meaning the time to recover what you paid, is a few years, 4 or 5, depending on what you pay for it, the incentives, all that. In the UK, it would probably be, you know, 7-8 years, but these things have a lifetime of 20-25 years, so it clearly is still worth it. We were late coming to the game, but we've made, I think, significant strides, and there's certainly more in the pipeline.
What about the fact that, for example, at this particular moment, a barrel of crude oil is $40, whereas a year ago, or some time ago anyway, it was up in the hundreds? Do you think this is going to make a difference to your industry, or do you think this will just be a hiccup?
Well, it depends how long it lasts. I think if the price of oil stays low, which it looks like it might for a year, 2 years or more, it will certainly hurt the renewable energy industry because, of course, it's cheaper to burn fuel. Same thing with what we're seeing locally. Yes, everybody likes cheaper electricity and everybody likes cheaper fuel. But when you lower the price, it basically makes it more likely that people will consume more. So if petrol costs less, you will drive more. If electricity costs less, you will be less careful about conserving. So yes, unfortunately, cheaper fuel prices don't help the renewable energy industry.
But then, of course, there is the other element, which is the environmental element, which has come to the fore. There are people who have changed their mentality and who might even be prepared to pay that bit more to know that their carbon footprint is less than somebody else's, and therefore they are in some way contributing, even in their small way, to the general environmental condition of the island.
Yeah, those people are the converted, so we don't need to do much to have them adopt renewable energy, use more renewable energy, use less energy. Unfortunately, of course, we're more interested in the majority of the population because the strength is in numbers. So both in conservation and in renewable energy adoption, the more you have, the better. You touched on an important point earlier when you said in places like Israel and even Cyprus, they had to install, for example, solar water heaters. In Malta, I think we missed the boat when we had the building boom, which in a way is still going on, but that we didn't put such a rule. That because once you're building a property, it doesn't cost much more to put a 1,000 euro, 1,500 euro solar water heater on top, but then it would mean that every house has one. Whereas actually solar water heaters have gone a bit out of fashion the last few years because people are opting for photovoltaics. And unfortunately, they're not really being pushed, marketed, both by the industry and by government.
So the solar water heater would be, as the name suggests, a system to heat the water
instead of your geyser. But for most families, you know, what I tell people and students is, as a rule of thumb, if you're 3-4+ people in a house and, you know, you're using hot water most of the year, then it makes sense to install a solar water heater because the amount of energy you capture per square meter is actually higher in a solar water heater than a photovoltaic. So if you have a small piece of roof, it's better to put that if you're using hot water than photovoltaics. But like I said, unfortunately, everybody is going towards photovoltaics, which is a good thing, but we have not in parallel continued pushing solar water heaters. The number is down to a trickle of new installations, and I believe we should revert that.
And the photovoltaics would supply electricity for the whole house and not just for your water heater.
Yes. So photovoltaics simply produce electricity. You can either consume it yourself or you can feed it directly into the grid, and then you're still buying electricity, so you're selling and buying, which is what most people do.
And are we doing that at the moment?
At
one point there was a problem about it, but that's been settled?
Yes. I think it has been settled. I mean, it's clearly a good thing. So it's great that we're seeing all these families put photovoltaics on their roof and factories and the university itself, which recently put photovoltaics on all its roofs. But, like I said, we should not neglect solar water heaters at the same time.
Let's talk a bit about renewable targets and the decisions that countries are having to take in this regard. There are various renewables, wind, solar, biomass, hydroelectric, and perhaps you could tell us about the reasons for which Malta has gone or is going for the land-based photovoltaic farms after we heard those long discussions about the wind farm at Sicalbaida and other suggestions, some of them quite hairy and others quite reasonable.
Well, the targets were put together some 7 years ago. Now, 7 years ago, the technology which made the most sense was wind. Primarily, it boils down to cost. So at that time, onshore wind was the cheapest. Offshore wind was actually cheaper than photovoltaics. As I said, about 3-4 years ago, primarily due to two things. The raw materials for photovoltaics, the stuff I work on, silicon, has dropped dramatically in price. And the other thing is China. China went into the market aggressively, so in fact now they dominate the production, and they tend to dominate with very, very large factories, and therefore they've dropped the price. So those two things together have dropped the price of panels by more than half. And because of that, the cost of photovoltaics have plummeted, which means today it's cheaper to produce electricity using photovoltaics rather than wind. So it just didn't make sense anymore. And it was already being evaluated about 3-4 years ago, exactly when this change happened. Other technologies are just not mature, things like wave or marginal technologies.
And biomass?
Biomass is being used. Biomass is being used. But again, we're a small country, so we have a limit of the biomass. We don't have gigantic farms, so we're recycling our own waste. We're recycling the San Antonin, Barkat plants are doing the recycling. They are using gas from landfills. So we are doing what we can with what we have. There's probably a little bit more potential, and I'm sure it will be captured in the next few years. But once you run out of the waste, what are you going to do? Import waste? So we don't have forests. For example, most people will be surprised to know that sometimes forests can be used as a renewable energy target because, well, they regrow. So if you do it sustainably, it makes sense. We don't have that option. As we said earlier, we don't have many options. We don't have hydroelectric. We don't have... So Malta, solar is our main target.
In fact, my next question was going to be, what are the options for Malta and other islands like ours? Even with regard to photovoltaics, there were, if you're doing it in England and you've got a very large reservoir, I mean, I remember there was a very large water reservoir near my town in Kent. It was huge. And these are being used for floating photovoltaic farms. No salt problems. And so that's fine. And there are many lakes, even in England, let alone, say, in the Scandinavian countries. We don't have that. So what are Malta's options, really?
Yeah, we have a project, which is now in its third and final year, called Solacqua, which is funded by MCST, Malta Council for Science and Technology, to study floating photovoltaics. About, I guess, 15 months ago, we launched the first floating photovoltaic system probably in the world, in Malta, which is the one right below Aleth Marku. It's still there, it's still generating data. We also launched other prototypes, and we were analyzing the data. As you said, other countries have lakes, have reservoirs, ponds, and we have very few of those. 6 or 7 years ago, people started putting photovoltaics on them. And the reason they did it, in fact, the first one was in California, is because it's in place where land is expensive. And you'd rather not use, for example, the first one was in a winery. You'd rather not use the land you're going to plant vines in and rather use the pond. Malta has the same situation. Land is very expensive. And it's not building land, of course. That wouldn't make sense to put photovoltaics. But we cannot put photovoltaics on outside development zone. So the amount of land, first of all, is very limited. So these are disused quarries, rooftops, etc. And secondly, what is available, if you try to buy it, is quite expensive, in the range of 30 to 40 euros per square meter. So the option would be, and that's what we're discussing, put them on the sea. And as long as you can do it at a price that's comparable to what it would cost you on land, economically it would be viable. Of course, there's a technical viability, things like salt, like corrosion, like, of course, elements. You have to be able to sustain the forces. But, you know, we have things like fish farms, and those are there year-round, and they do sustain the elements, so why not solar farms?
And there aren't any fish to escape.
No, exactly. Exactly. And actually, the reflection of the surface will help with the production, as will the cooling effect of the sea. So,
I was intrigued by some of the prototypes that you mention in your articles, because one imagines them as the photovoltaic panels we know, the flat blue things, and they're modular, and you stick them together, and you can have, I suppose, a large array or a smaller one. But you also mention other possibilities.
One idea we had about 5 years ago was create a panel which actually floats. So then you wouldn't even need to create a structure for it to float on. There are challenges. Then you'd have to attach each panel separately. You'd have to anchor them separately. But especially in shallow water, that might actually make sense. And you can imagine something that looks like a sphere or a small flying saucer. And that itself would be a photovoltaic, and then it would be floating in the sea. Now, that, I think people will understand immediately. We have buoys in the water all the time, and they survive. So if you can make it of the right material, it will survive. And you could have hundreds of them. The advantage there would also be that you could either have literally thousands, or you could have a few of them in an area, for example, where you're delineating a beach or at the edge of a boating area or something like that.
That's what I thought, in fact. It came to my mind when I was reading it. At this point, as time is rushing on, perhaps we can turn to the new venue for the Institute for Sustainable Energy, which is to be opened shortly at Maserschlag. You were working in another area, not on campus, but down at Maserschlag before, but this is a new project.
Yes.
And as an institute, why did you feel the need to create this new venture, and what are its main aims? Yes.
As I mentioned earlier, about 4 or 5 years ago, I had been here, and right after I joined the University of Malta. There are other members, and everybody has their own area of expertise and interest. And my area of expertise and interest is solar materials. And of course, we did not have any equipment or labs in that area. So I started looking for funding, and it wasn't an easy road, but about 2 years ago, we actually got ERDF funding for building a solar research lab. And the lab is now ready, and it will be inaugurated shortly, as you mentioned. And it is one of the best equipped labs in Europe for this specific research purpose. So I think I finished our last interview by saying I hope to have a lab, and now I can proudly say that we do have a lab, and it's a very nice lab. We did hire two systems engineers and a lab officer to work in it. We are already getting students. We already have 2 master students and an interested PhD candidate. So it will be plus, given the equipment we have there and the expertise we're going to generate there, it will be a very attractive venue, not just for Malta, but also for foreign universities. So most universities in Europe, and including the biggest names, do not have this equipment or expertise. So I'm sure we'll be a very attractive collaborator for them.
That's very impressive. Perhaps you could describe the laboratories so that people can have an idea of how they are, what fills them, and what you're going to be doing in them.
Sure. Maserschlag site is quite large, actually. It's about 7,000 square meters. And there were 2 barrack blocks, the old military barrack blocks, which were used as offices. And one of them was actually derelict. We weren't using it. And those were converted to labs. So there's 300-something square meters of labs. One is an open plan, 2 blocks, and one is separate rooms. So we'll have things like microscopes, furnaces, an etching area where we can do wet chemical testing. Plus, we have a lot of very specialized equipment that is used for characterizing semiconductor material. So you're able to do things, for example, like image minute, very, very, very small defects in silicon or other solar materials, you're able to characterize the quality of the various things. You're able to deposit, we also have some deposition, tin films on top of other materials to, we'll be able to do, for example, when we're all set up properly, even some rudimentary solar cells ourselves. Plus, many of the equipment pieces there are actually used for other things too. So we're already collaborating with various departments here at university, and even some industry, both local and foreign, is already interested in collaborating with us.
This has been a theme that has run through most of the interviews that I've been involved in lately, this idea of interdisciplinarity and the fact that very few areas of expertise can sort of stand on their own.
Sure.
But they actually do need to have the collaboration of not only people from other departments, but also people from industry as well. And that once we've had this wonderful gift, really, of this new institute with its wonderful equipment, we should be using it to its maximum development.
Sure. And the industry from the cutting-edge research part, it would probably be foreign industry. So obviously nobody in Malta is manufacturing solar cells, etc. But then locally there are companies that are doing materials, not necessarily solar materials, that can still benefit from the expertise and the equipment in this lab. And, of course, other departments. In fact, we've barely opened the lab and we're already getting regular requests for support from especially graduate students to do measurements. Today, in fact, while I'm here, there we have somebody doing measurements over there. And you're right. I mean, people in materials, people in engineering, people in architecture, people in science, we overlap so much, especially in areas like this where you can have a chemical engineer, an electrical engineer, a physicist, a material scientist, and they're pretty much doing all the same thing.
And obviously here you're not going to be producing the panels yourselves.
No, it's not panels, it's materials,
So you're going to be, in a way, trying to improve
upon
what already exists.
The ultimate goal is to both analyze and research the material. 20 or so years ago, semiconductors, meaning electronics, realized that the materials themselves have these, without going into too many details, have these very tiny defects that are affecting the performance. And there was a massive research effort around the world, of which I was part, to improve that. Now that same thing is hitting solar, because solar is improving and they're starting to see these same defects affecting their material. And the solution cannot be the same one, because the solution adopted in semiconductor was rather costly, and solar is very price driven. So there's going to have to be other solutions. So we hope to be part of that effort with, like I said, probably, obviously there are several, but international companies, European and non-European, and other universities, EU-funded projects, we hope, and all that.
Well, it certainly makes sense that Malta should be at the forefront of this kind of research, but certainly to have its place within the research of Europe and the rest of the world. Obviously, you have a vision, I presume, for the institute itself. Where would you like to see it going, really, in the future? Or do you think at some point, if you had some more funding, I'm asking you for a bit of a wish list of how you think it could develop over the next years?
Well, I certainly can't complain. You know, we just obtained almost 5 million euros of funding, so I'm not, I can't be greedy.
Not to be sniffed at.
But, you know, obviously, yes, we do have. We've just, really, we developed one area, which happens to be the area I work in this grandiose way. We could certainly do the same with other areas. So some of my colleagues work in wind, energy in buildings, There's areas like biofuels, transport. Some of these areas are also research is being done in other departments. So in some cases, it will be done in collaboration with other departments. But yes, you could see areas where we develop major research labs in all those areas, and Malta would be at the forefront, not just of one area, but of all the areas. Some are happening. Electronic engineering is putting together a device fabrication lab in the future, and I hope to, as part of this collaboration we're talking about, to also be able to do solar materials in there. Wind energy, wave energy, mechanical engineering, and other engineering departments are interested in and will probably develop capability in the new buildings that are being built around here. So some will happen, but there will be lacuna which will probably we probably should fill. So we'll see. And right now this project has obviously taken quite a toll on me, and it's as you know, managing and running these projects takes a lot of effort. But obviously you have to take the opportunity when it comes. So if new funding becomes available, we definitely will be up for it.
And sometimes this research is can be person oriented. We were lucky enough to have you, who had a particular expertise, and you've developed that expertise to the benefit of the Institute. But there will be others, postgraduate students who will come in, and postdocs who will be interested in other areas, and therefore will contribute to the growth.
Sure, and even the area, in my area. So in addition to being director of the Institute, I'm also group leader of the Solar Research Lab. And I do plan to develop other people and eventually other academics that obviously, so that when eventually I retire or move on to other areas or whatever, the thing will keep going. And not only that, but truly make our Institute and University of Malta a leader in this area by creating a nucleus of people doing research in that area.
Well, our time has come to an end. Professor Mulestanio, thank you very, very much for coming to talk to us about the Institute for Sustainable Energy.
Thank you.
You've been listening to University Matters on Campus FM. Do join me again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.
Il-program li għadkom kem smajtu kien miġju plilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.